Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
It's Mental Health Monday here on Radio City Talk. I'm David Easton, in for Mick Coyle. And happy to say that Lee Pennington joins us from the Open Door Centre. Good afternoon, Lee.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us.
So tell us about the Open Door Centre. How long have your doors been open?
Yeah, so we opened in November 2011. And over that time, it sort of evolved from being quite a nice sort of small-scale community group to now being a sort of key and vital mental health support organisation and resource on the Wirral. So it's a membership sort of organisation. So someone will become a member of the charity. It's an independent charity. Once you're a member, which is free of charge and immediate, there's no waiting lists, then you can access any of our events and services and activities, so which really fall within three categories. So there's one around support, a sort of creative and innovative sort of version of the CBT, sort of therapeutic process for people who are feeling depressed or anxious or stressed or getting panic attacks or feeling low. Typically young people, but open to all ages, but primarily people between like 15 and 30, but people of all ages are welcome to access the charity on that side of it. And then we've got a side around volunteering and training and basically bringing together members of the community who want to get engaged and involved in tackling these sorts of issues, giving them opportunities to then do so. So it's a collection of people from the community coming together to support others that the management just sort of facilitate. So we've got training and volunteering opportunities around that. And then the third strand is really around music and the arts and creativity and basically sitting the charity as much within that world as we do within the world of mental health and health and well-being and stuff. So, you know, using music and using the arts to leverage discussions around mental health, which aren't going on elsewhere, to tackling taboos and stigmas and misunderstandings, so people will more readily access support if they're not feeling the best. So, you know, there's three sort of strands really to what we do that takes various different sorts of guises and projects, but once you remember, you can access them all free of charge, no wait list.
So when it comes to support, who is or what kind of people are coming to you for support?
Vast, you know, diverse sort of range of people from the community, but as I say, it's around 80% of it. We're very much designed and tailored and promote and market, and we're designed with people between like 15 and between the ages of 15 and 30 in mind. But as we say, you know, some people who become members are like 65, 75, who, if they like the fact that the whole charity, its personality and its look and its appearance and everything about it is designed to be the polar opposite to a lot of the things that put people off maybe accessing support elsewhere. So it can be quite clinical, quite sort of intensive. So we're bright and friendly and welcoming and relaxing and artistic and look and feel like nothing else around this sort of sector. So, you know, if someone of any age, you know, and again, you don't need any diagnosis, you don't need any sort of referral in, although we do get referrals from GPs and social services and job centres and stuff, primarily it's word of mouth and people hearing about the charity and maybe seeing the charity and coming along and, you know, positive word of mouth, hearing good things about what we're doing and accessing when people want it completely on their terms in a way that is really bespoke to that person's sort of needs. It's not a one-size-fits-all sort of thing. So, you know, universal sort of support for members of the community. Like.
And the people who are volunteering and training, you call them your ambassadors, are they?
Yeah. So we've got the first way that anyone would get involved voluntarily or, you know, in the delivery of the charity is by signing up for, we've got an eight-week training programme for 3 hours a week called the Opening Doors Volunteering Initiative. So it's giving people a crash course into introduction into what working in this sector or community or charities or, you know, whatever it may be is all about. So once they've completed that, if it's something that we think the person would be good at, if it's something that they wanted to do, and if we had someone sign up to become a member to access the support side of things, who personality-wise, life experience-wise, whatever it may be, we thought it would be a good fit with this volunteer, they can then go on to become a mentor with us. So at any given time, we've got around 20 mentors sort of working one-to-one, delivering this sort of adaptation of CBT to around between 40 and 50 members a week. And from that pool of mentors, which is ongoing, we have got an ambassador team, which is seven strong at the moment, which is sort of taking extra responsibilities in sort of delivering and managing and basically, yeah, delivering what we're delivering day to day.
And the music and the art side of it, I guess it's what makes you special. It's your selling point, isn't it?
Completely. It's a key part of the identity, and the fact that, you know, we're not a mental health charity, but we're not an arts organisation, but we're somewhere in between. So that's very, very, very unique to the world of mental health and health and wellbeing. So, I mean, we've got a live music promotions side to the charity called Astral Coast, where we do festival most years. We do gigs from time to time. We've got a recording studio called Fresh Goods in Birkenhead, where we do podcasts and we do sessions with bands and bits and bobs. And then we've got a couple of exciting things in the pipeline. Like, we're exploring opportunities to open a music venue within the sort of Birkenhead on the Whittle area, because, you know, Whittle it's got an abundance of musical goings on and musical happenings, but it's not got a hub for it or a home for it as such. So we're going to open a venue where we'll do club nights and we'll do gigs and, you know, different stuff like around that. But that's a bit of a watch this space, so to speak. But again, you know, that's not like the idea behind the music set. It's not like got mental health at its core in a preachy way. It's, you know, the best stuff that's going to be happening on the Whittle and within Merseyside around music, but basically having some sort of element of awareness raising, or, you know, sort of tackling taboos and stigmas and myths and stuff as a presence there. But again, like everything that we do, it's not in a way that's meant to be preachy or, you know, anything like that. It's all very chilled and but again, quite a unique mix. Like,
so if someone is feeling a bit low or anxious or a bit stressed, and that they feel that music might be, or the arts might be their way out of that, I mean, is that the kind of person you want to come to you?
Yeah. Anyone. I mean, it's not music therapy as such. It's quite a separate side, the therapeutic sort of side of it. But you know, we music is a universal sort of medium that has diverse. So some people, you know, if they're not feeling the best, might pick up a guitar or write a bit of poetry and stuff like that. So we've got something called the Boom Room, which is like a weekly jam session, which is tapping into that side of it. But also, you know, using sitting ourselves within the world of music, because it's a universal sort of thing that, you know, not many people that you'll find will say, oh, I'm not into any sort of music, or I don't go to festivals. So we're just trying to sort of sit within that world and reach people on a level that people can relate to, you know what I mean? So it's sort of multifaceted, the way that we use music. Or even, like, you know, we're exploring like opportunities to do like choirs and stuff like that. So, because the process of singing and the process of being creative can have a direct impact on the way that you're feeling as well. So we're just trying to make it a very bespoke, flexible way that we work, really.
So it's a membership format, so you can join up. It's the Open Door Centre, so it feels very, I don't know. You've got to strike a balance between that kind of feeling that it's a club, but also you're the open door as well. You've got to be welcoming to people as they come in, haven't you?
The idea behind membership is, you know, we want people to feel part of what we're doing, because a lot of the people who are already actually involved in the day to day delivery. I mean, my role now is sort of director of the charity, so I'm sort of away from the front line, that we've got a charity manager, but the actual people who are delivering what we're doing are sourced directly from the people who are coming and access and support. If someone might come along who's not feeling the best, they'll do the creative therapeutic support for a period of 8 weeks. Hopefully they've taken a lot from that and they're sort of feeling better within themselves, and we encourage everyone then to get involved voluntarily in the volunteering initiative, at the end of which, if it's something that they want to do and we think they'll be good at and that, they can go right back to the start of the process and pair up with someone who's in the same situation that they were in a while back. So that was the idea behind membership, in that it's you know, actually it's everybody's sort of organisation and everybody's part of it.
So you take a bit of ownership, but also you get the feeling of that kind of that family feel as well.
Exactly, yeah. And that's translated within the actual premises and the staffing and, you know, everything about it. You know, it looks and feels something that, you know, I mean, we talk about the look of it. It's somewhere that people want to spend their time anyway, which overcomes so many barriers, because people think that when you access support around depression or anxiety or stress, they're going to run out with a straitjacket and, or you've gone mad and all this. So we're just trying to normalise things and drop a really cool, unique, creative organisation into the heart of the community, where people can come, feel part of and feel involved the same time as addressing whatever needs that they want to address on their terms. You know, people don't need a diagnosis, or even with us, you know, people know better than anyone if they're feeling a certain way that is impacting on their life, then that's good enough for us. You know, it's sort of, we don't sit and make decisions on who's suitable or anything like that. We leave that up to the people who become members, and by becoming a member, that's good enough for us. Like.
And again, is that a difficult balance for you to strike in that, it might be a great cultural hub and the music is getting played and the art side of it, but also you don't want it to be too niche or anything. You don't want it to be too hipstery. You need everyone to realise that it's for everybody.
Yeah, that is something that we're aware of, that, you know, striking the that sort of balance, but hopefully, and you know, all evidence suggests that we're striking quite a nice sort of happy medium, because, you know, it's been over the getting on for 6 years that we've been open. We've won like numerous like local and national awards and recognition, and as I say, it's grown to a size and scale, and you know, in terms of its reputation, that it is now a key and vital sort of resource on the Whittle for around these subjects. So yeah, hopefully we're hitting the right medium. But even if, you know, if someone just wanted to access the music side, and that's fine with us. You know, if someone just wants to come and do the volunteering or the training, or someone wants to come to the mindfulness that we do each week, or the eating disorder support group that we do with Tomorrow's Women, or whichever. You know, people don't have to come think, oh, I don't play an instrument, so I can't go and access the support. Because you know, that, so a lot of people, the majority of people who come and access support, I've got a musical bone in the body, but you know, it's just creating an aesthetic and a personality which is going to make people feel hopefully more comfortable, laid back, and break down as many of the preconceived ideas that what support like this looks like, break down as many of them as possible, so people will access support when they need it, as well as getting a very tailored and bespoke version of that when they do reach out.
We're talking about the Open Door Centre in Liskeard. Lee Pennington's here. You, in the 6 years that you've been going, you must have seen some success stories so far, and some difficult stories as well, that hopefully you've worked together to help out.
Yeah, it's an evolving organisation. No year's been the same, but I mean, I think in terms of success, I mean, there's a couple of key sorts of statistics which I think sum up what we're doing and support basically everything that I'm saying, is that it's pretty much a 50-50 male-female split of, I think we've just gone over 750 people who've accessed the creative therapeutic support since we opened, and of them it's pretty much 50-50 male-female split, which again is pretty unheard of around when you're talking about depression and anxiety and mental health elsewhere and GP access. So you know, we're working in a way that means that men are more likely to sort of buy in and get involved in an organisation like ours, as well as the fact, I think it's about 40% of the people who come along have accessed no previous support, despite many like having like long-term symptoms. So the idea is we're reaching people who wouldn't or couldn't go down that traditional sort of avenue of support. So but yeah, I mean, and you know, success, I gauge success on, you know, coming in when I go in the centre, and you know, it's just one person who's talking about, you know, to change their life or whatever. But also, you know, we get all sorts of like analysis on a wider sort of service user. We don't call them service user, but membership base as a whole, which yeah makes you really proud and makes you you know, feel that you're doing something good and doing something differently. So.
And you mentioned you get some referrals from GPs. I suppose locally people will see the work that you're doing, and it's kind of obvious to say, well, that might be this looks like the place for you. But does it take some convincing of some GPs or people locally to say, well, we could help you out?
Well, where we're at the moment, it's probably the challenge is really the opposite, because I mean, if all GPs on the Whittle all of a sudden get onto that, we're there, because we're a free service, and you know, we are run on shoestring budget, and you know, we are completely independent. We don't get a penny off, you know, NHS or councils or anything like that. So it's a case of, you know, we just need to manage the referral avenues, including GPs being a key one, to make sure that we're not swamped by demand, because we've always managed to maintain being free of waiting lists which is, you know, completely unheard of really when you talk about talking therapies and support around mental health. But if we were to get swamped, and next week 50 referrals coming from GPs, that'd kill the charity. So we just need to manage that. But we're putting stuff in place around that. We're sort of trying to build reserves and get money coming in outside of being just reliant on grants. So hopefully the stuff with the music venue might be some sort of social enterprise angle around the GPs. We're looking about our strategy and putting together a sort of service around that. And then we're also working with a lot with businesses on quite a big scale. So our key member at the moment is Unilever. So we're going in and applying the personality of the charity to their organisation, to their workforce, to meet whatever needs exist around mental health within Unilever, for example. But that again is like a social enterprise. So if we can build reserves and grow our reserves and grow our resources and grow naturally to meet this increase in need, which is, ever increasing, then that'll allow us to move forward in a safe and sustainable way, which is where we're at really.
Well, how is that? How have you changed the way that you work? Something we're going to talk about later is about mental health in work and how work can impact massively on people's mental health.
Yeah.
In a company the size of Unilever, how has that worked with you going in, and how has the company worked with you?
I mean, the thing that is really appealing to that we've been, you know, to an organisation like Unilever, is that we're not coming in as your typical occupational health. Here's a workshop. These are the signs and symptoms of depression and anxiety. Because that's not us. We're coming in with a different angle on it, a different slant. It's hard because, I mean, any organisation of that size, or, you know, pretty much any organisation, have got different cultures around mental health. So a lot of the time you've got to really be aware of what challenges workers are facing and then sort of tailor what you're doing to that organisation. But, I mean, we're going in with Unilever and, you know, piloting on a relatively small scale. So we're working with the research and development site at first, doing sort of, going in and we're doing mindfulness, and we're going in and we're doing sort of giving people awareness around what CBT is and spotting thinking errors, and you know, getting people doing meditation and stuff like that. So the fact that we're coming in from a completely different angle, organisations like that, and the fact that basically everything about the Open Door Centre is driven by, at all levels, by people with experience, however mild, you know, of the types of issues that we're supporting around, and again, completely unique to other sort of people doing similar work within businesses. But it's an important place for organisations like us to move into, because I mean there's a world of extra stresses, and, you know, whether it might be the practical workload sort of stuff, but maybe even around, you know, job satisfaction, or, you know, maybe there's good redundancies on the horizon. It's a bit of a melting pot. At the same time as the practical issues, that if you want to access support and you're working 9 to 5, where do you go? You can't go to the doctors, and you don't want to talk to your manager about it because you might perceive that your manager's going to tell you off, or, you know,
or just ignore you,
you know what I mean, or not going to get where you're coming from. So we're just trying to basically pitch what we're doing on a person-centred basis, so people have got skills and techniques and knowledge and understanding to, they can adapt to their own life and their own thinking, but also in a workplace situation, we're definitely trying to get them to apply it to their work and workplace scenarios, and really trying to change cultures around sort of mental health within the workplace. But, you know, it's one angle to go in and get people talking and increase tolerance and all this, but it's really important as well that the infrastructure behind that, and what is available to people when they do reach out or they do talk to someone, and what that support looks like, or what options are available to people, that changes at the same time. Because, I mean, this is something that, you know, that we feel in wider society, that a lot of the emphasis around mental health is let's get people talking, let's be open, let's be transparent, you know, all this sort of stuff. And a great deal of progress has been made around that. I know, like, the Prince is doing stuff at the moment, and, you know, by celebrities open up, which is great, it's positive. But now, behind what that support looks like and where people go to access support, or, you know, what options are available to people, that needs to change to meet this increase in need at the same time, because, unfortunately, A lot of the time, that hasn't changed, and people are sat on waiting lists for a year and a half, and you know, it just doesn't match where people are at and what people expect when they do make that really important step of accessing support or talking to someone. Like.
So if people think that it's the open door for them, it might be the kind of thing that might help them, or even if a business has heard that you might be able to help them, how can they get in touch?
So the phone number is 0151 639 4545. I nearly forgot that.
It's the pressure.
The first, 6 years later, I'm forgetting the phone number. 639 4545. And then the email address is info@theopendoorcentre.org. And that goes directly through to me. So any questions, queries, you know, you'd like to book to come along and find out more, anything at all, just there. Give us a shout or drop by. We're open 12 till 6 Monday to Friday.
And it's, whereabouts are you down? Is it Seaview Road?
Yeah, the Seaview Road, Liscard. So we're on the that main sort of, as you go up Seaview Road towards Asda, we're on the right, but you can't miss. We've had like a big mural because people used to go past all the time and say, oh, I'm up and down that way all the time and I never knew you were there. So we've got a huge mural and all sorts there now that you can't miss us, hopefully.
Brilliant. Well, hopefully. There'll be some people that can get in touch and you can help them. That'd be fantastic. Thanks for coming in. That's Lee Pennington from the Open Door Centre in Liscard. And good luck with all your work.
Thank you very much for having us.
No problem at all. This is Liverpool Live. You listen to Radio City Talk. And this is Mental Health Monday.
Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
You're listening to Radio City Talk. This is Liverpool Live. And now we're going to talk about mental health and in the workplace, how our mental health is affecting our jobs and how our jobs are affecting our mental health. And I'm glad to say that I'm joined on the line by Sophie Rawlings from Mind. And Sophie, hello.
Hi.
First up, and the findings of this survey that you've done, it's been a large survey, hasn't it? What's been the main things that come out of it?
So Mind surveyed 15,000 employees about the state of their mental health in the workplace, and the findings are quite shocking. The research shows that work is a really key factor in causing men poor mental health above problems outside of work. It's also really concerning to see that so many men find themselves unable to speak to their bosses about the impact that work is having on their mental well-being, and even more worrying to see that they're then not asking to take time off when they need it compared to women.
And this is specifically, as you said, to compare and contrast between men and women. You found it's men in the workplace who are suffering.
Absolutely. So men are twice as likely to have mental health problems due to their job compared to problems outside of work. But actually, women, on the other hand, say that their job and problems outside of work are equal contributing factors. The data also shows that men are less prepared to seek help and take time off than women. So it's really important here to show that we're not laying the blame here with employers, because actually they're doing such good work across the board in terms of tackling stress and supporting mental health in the workplace. But the problem we're seeing here is that men don't see the workplace as an open culture to have that conversation. And that's something we really want employers to take as a priority, really.
So it's not kind of a vicious circle of attitudes of the culture in the workplace from businesses. It's more of an internal thing where men are just not considering even the prospect of getting any help if they ask for it.
Absolutely. So the findings show that 3 in 4 line managers feel confident in supporting a team member with mental health problems. And we also know that so many employers are doing some fantastic things in terms of bettering the well-being of their staff. Although we do also know that there are some employers that could do better in that area. But the issue we're seeing here is that men are more likely to find work a factor in terms of worsening their mental health, but then they're not willing to talk about it. So the key thing we're really urging men to do is to have that open conversation when you need it, because the support is there. And it's really important to do that sooner rather than later, before people reach crisis point.
And you worked with some big organisations in this survey and several thousand people.
Absolutely. So 30 organisations took part in our first ever index. We had some fantastic organisations, including Lendlease, the Environment Agency, Jaguar Land Rover, various schools and charities, and also the Environment Agency, which is obviously based in Liverpool.
And the poll found that 1 in 3 men attributed poor mental health to their job. So that was the effect of their job on their own mental health, but also people were bringing their own mental health problems to work with them, and basically it was just it being exacerbated.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're doing now is we're really urging employers from across all industries and all sectors to come and have a chat with us and think about signing up to our Workplace Wellbeing Index, which is a benchmark of best policy and practice. It's been designed to celebrate the good work that employers are doing to promote and support positive mental health, but it's also there to provide key recommendations on the specific areas where there is room to improve.
Is there a feeling that there is still that... It seems strange in the 21st century, but still that macho culture?
Absolutely. Many men work in industries where a macho image is seen as important, or there might be a very competitive environment. That's not to say across the board, but obviously that could then prevent them from feeling able to be open and talk to their boss when they need it. So we need to make sure that the culture is there so they feel comfortable in talking about their mental health problems.
And do men sometimes feel as if they have to, if they're going to take action, it's almost an internal one? It's doing exercise, it's running, it's just keeping it inside still, but feeling that they can work it out in some way.
The most important thing that anybody can do if they're worried about their mental health is to reach out for support, whether that be in the workplace or a family member or a friend or organisations like Mind. We're here to help, and we're really keen to make sure that people are getting the support they need, whether that be then taking up a new sport, which we know is really instrumental in bettering mental health, or whether that be then going to speak to somebody like a GP to find out what other support is available.
So something like sport or exercise could be part of the answer, but it's not something to kind of internalise and focus on and shut everything out from and using it as that kind of tool.
Absolutely. So we know that sport can be a really key factor in boosting mental health. There's something to be said for being outside, whether that be running, walking, gardening. There's something there that anybody can do. And research does show that sport and exercise can absolutely better your mental health.
So, of course, from a business's point of view and from employers, it's also about having your employees healthy and happy, and that will make for a better workforce.
We know at Mind that if an employer and line managers are better supporting their staff, that actually the results they'll get as a result will be much better. So not only does it benefit the individual, but it will actually also benefit your organisation as well.
And you've mentioned that you've been pleased with the reaction that you've seen so far from businesses, small and large in the UK, that they're getting on board with this.
In the last few years, we've seen employers come on leaps and bounds when it comes to tackling stress and supporting mental well-being of their staff. But there is a lot more to do. We're really pleased with how much workforces are really making sure that well-being in the workplace is a key priority. But we need to make sure that this is across the board, across all sectors, across all businesses, because mental health needs to be seen in the same way as physical health.
And if workers and employers want to get involved and find out more about Mind's Workplace Wellbeing Index, what can they do?
So employers can find out more about our Workplace Wellbeing Index on our website. So please visit mind.org.uk/workplace.
And it's your own mental health. People might not even think that they have a problem, might they? And sometimes it's just about recognising that you do, and then getting the help that you require.
It's not just supporting those with a diagnosed mental health problem. I think well-being at work is such a big priority, whether that be having an open culture in terms of seeking support when you need it, but it's also thinking about your general well-being every day.
Well, that's important, isn't it? And to actually have a culture where everything seems a bit more open, a bit more relaxed, actually will work better for workers rather than a high pressure environment.
Definitely, and it works. You know, the proof is here in this research. So we really are urging all employers to come on board, take part in the index, and let's make mental health at work more of a priority.
Okay, Sophie Rawlings from Mind, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk, tackling the stigma.